Browns, Giants, Sunday afternoon, Huntington Bank Field. Browns trying to go 2-1. Giants trying to go 1-2. Trying to get a win. They nearly won against Washington. What's it going to take to beat the New York Giants? How well does Deshaun Watson have to play to beat the New York Giants? Well, to answer those questions, we welcome in Nathan Zagura. He is the color analyst all along the University Hospital's Cleveland Browns radio network. He'll be in the booth with Andrew Siciliano on Sunday. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning, Monfrere. Great to be with you.
Nathan appears on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Nathan, how well does Deshaun Watson have to play to get a win on Sunday?
It's the ultimate team game, Ken. And quite frankly, look, the Browns are the better team here. And I think if they avoid turnovers, they will win this game. The Browns are 15-2 under Kevin Stefanski when they do not turn the football over. And this is a New York Giants team that is overmatched. This is one of the worst offenses in the NFL over their last eight starts with Daniel Jones at quarterback. They're 1-7. They're averaging 15 points a game, 159 passing yards per game, four touchdowns, eight picks. They're giving up five sacks a game. I mean, when you talk about a perfect matchup for what our defense does, they feast on bad quarterbacks. Daniel Jones, outside of that 2022 season, has not been a very good quarterback. And so I would expect the Browns to be able to get a lot of pressure and then be able to play their defense behind that and really stifle this Giants team. And then offensively, you know, I like what Deshaun Watson showed down in Jacksonville. Quarterbacks so far this season are completing 79% of their passes and have a rating of 105.5 against the Giants. So I look for Deshaun to play well, but I think the real secret in this one is going to be the combination of Deontay Foreman and Jerome Ford on the ground against a Giants team that's given up almost 140 yards rushing per game to running backs at nearly 6 yards per carry. They have been one of the worst run defenses in the league last week in Washington. Robinson ran for a 133 against them. So I think that this could be a big game for the Browns on the ground and then defensively just go after Danny Dimes and get some turnovers.
I thought lost in a lot of the analysis from last week was just how effective that running game was at times. And of course you had a big run that was negated with the, you know, the penalty with the face mask. But overall, I thought the running game got going, and I thought that opened things up for the offense a little bit last week.
Well, they came out, and I think that you're exactly right. Something that I certainly have been highlighting. They came out big with Deontay Foreman, and on the first run of the game, you know, showed that, all right, we're going to be physical. We're going to get back to running the football a little bit. And Foreman and Ford combined for 21 carries for 106 yards. So that's exactly what you would have wanted to see from this ground game. And, in fact, you pointed out correctly, there were not only one, there were three good Deontay Foreman runs that cost them probably about 30 yards that were called back due to penalty. So they have that ground game going. You're going to need to see more of that in this game against the Giants, because the Giants do a couple things that are interesting. They play a lot of zone, and they play the most off coverage in the league. And what I mean by the most off coverage, they play a lot of off coverage, but their cushion that they give is bigger than any team in the league. So if you can get the ground game going, force some of these people to come down a little bit, or then attack them on the outside with a quick passing game, I think the Browns should be able to have a consistent flow to their offense. But that, getting back to that physicality, I thought it was wild that Deontay Foreman didn't play in week one. And I think clearly everybody in the organization said, wait a second, we need to get this guy out there. And I expect him to have a very big game on Sunday against the Giants.
Sounds good to me. Nathan Zagura joining us here on the show. Defensively, I didn't think it was that bad as what some of us made it out to be in week one against Dallas. It was downright suffocating against Jacksonville. You mentioned Daniel Jones. You gave him way more respect than I will within that offense. I didn't even think 2020 was as good as what people make it out to be. But you know what? The rest of it's been rough, so let's let him have 2020. Can you get to him early and keep him off kilter, or do they kind of see what they can do to unlock that offense?
No, listen, the truth is this game is about doing two things. One, it is stopping Devin Singletary on the ground and containing Daniel Jones. And then two, and most importantly, it's about Malik Nabers. And I know the Browns do not like to double-team guys. We play our defense. But if there ever was a week where maybe you'd like to mix some of that in, this is the week. Last week, Malik Nabers, the sixth overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, he was targeted on 18 of the 27 targeted passes thrown by Daniel Jones. 18 of 27, that's 66.7%. That is the highest rate in a decade in a game for a single player. So far this year, he leads the NFL in target share. He's second in catches, fourth in yards, third in first downs, and he is first with five catches of 20 yards or more, also third in yards after the catch with 106. He is their offense. He is their offense. Almost, you can almost say period at the end. I mentioned Singletary. You still have to stop him, and obviously you give the Browns some fits last year with Houston. But if you can stop Neighbors, he's got more receiving yards than everybody else on the team combined through two games. That has to be a focus in this one, and I think that is the key. If you do not allow explosives to Neighbors, by the way, Daniel Jones has thrown five passes more than 20 yards in the air. All five have been targeted to Malik Neighbors. If you can stop Neighbors and limit his effectiveness, I don't really see what this offense has that scares you. Wandale Robinson averages below 10 yards a catch for his career. Darius Slayton's got some speed, but I like our corner matchups with Slayton one-on-one. So if you can stop Neighbors, not allow him to hit some of those chunk plays, I really think that it's going to be tough sledding for this Giants offense against the Browns defense.
Nathan Zagura with us right now on the hotline. So coming into the season, we were wondering when this new offense would get firing, when we would see it look like some of the rumors of a Ken Dorsey offense would look like. Through 2 weeks, what have you seen? What is the identity of that offense?
Well, I think it's an offense that can be very multiple, and you can see we can cut with Harrison, Zach Zinter, and that probably feels more like traditional Kevin Stefanski stuff and hit that. And then you can also get in a situation where you go empty and run a quarterback draw. That's definitely more Ken Dorsey stuff that led to the Browns' touchdown down at the goal line. I think you're starting to see a little bit more of it. They've got to be more disciplined in their motions, that the second guy can't start motion until the first guy's been fully set for a second. That negated a couple of big plays for the Browns in this game, but I think you're seeing some of the pre-snap motions, and the week was up significantly in week two. Some of those shotgun concepts and even some of the shotgun run game that the Browns are utilizing are definitely signs of what Kevin Stefanski has allowed Ken Dorsey to incorporate into this offense. So you're seeing it. I thought that first drive was such good rhythm. And then if they can maintain that, the truth of the matter is we're not going to see this offense unlock until they stop shooting themselves in the foot. And what I mean by that is penalties. The Browns lead the league in penalties overall. The Browns lead the league in offensive penalties. The Browns also lead the league in drop passes. I think once we can kind of eliminate some of those self-inflicted wounds, you're going to really see this offense start to go. But I know Amari Cooper is going to bounce back. I love what I've seen from Jerry Jeudy. I think he has looked very, very good in the early going here with the Browns.
Remember, DEFCON 1 is the highest rate of panic. DEFCON 5 is the lowest.
Miss this all the time.
They do. What DEFCON is Amari Cooper right now with us?
The lowest.
Five. DEFCON 5.
Did you say the lowest because you forgot the explanation already?
He forgot the explanation, didn't he?
Yeah, because then you guys are saying it, and I was like, wait a second, that's a higher number. No, DEFCON 1's the worst.
Yeah, DEFCON 1 is you get ready to bend over and kiss your ass goodbye.
Yeah, we're DEFCON 5. We're not even on the DEFCON. We don't get a DEFCON ranking.
Well, wait a minute. There's one man who is a veteran of the armed forces here. Is everything DEFCON 5, or is there no such thing as DEFCON if everything's fine? Yeah. You're off the DEFCON.
Oh, yeah. And you've watched War Games with Matthew Broderick?
Of course, every day I watch
it. Oh, great movie. It's a great movie.
I mean, the whole movie
I'm not concerned at all. And I thought, you know, Amari Cooper was very introspective yesterday.
You've seen Crimson Tide with Gene Hackman?
The whole movie's about the DEFCON system. I mean, it's important to note.
Go ahead.
It is important.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The more you know.
Nathan, DEFCON of this interview.
I thought Amari Cooper was very introspective yesterday and said, you know, maybe he had gotten a little bit away from some of the things that he needs to do in order to be the player that he has been. And he's going to kind of, it's been a wake-up call, he said, and going to rededicate himself to those things.
Nathan Zagura joining us here on the show. This is just asinine. How close is Jed Wills?
Very. I think it is. Definitely within the realm of possibility that you will see Jed Wills at left tackle for the Cleveland Browns against the Giants.
So Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah wore the Guardian cap on Sunday. I saw Jabril Peppers wearing one yesterday.
Yeah,
last night. Yeah. What's your thoughts? Lyme and I, we had our opinions of it. We are pro Guardian cap. Where do you stand on these matters, Nathan?
I'll be honest, I wasn't that excited about seeing them in games. I thought it might look ridiculous, but to be honest with you, the way that they have been able to make them look like the helmets, sure you notice it, but not really. You know, even when we were up in the booth, you didn't really notice that Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was wearing it, and he said it didn't affect his speed, and clearly not. He had a team-high 7 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss in that game against the Jags. Then if he feels safer in it and still feels like he can play the way he wants to, I'm all for it. So good for JOK, and I saw Jabril last night as well.
Do you think that this is something that stays, or do you think that they will develop something that gives it still a outer shell that resembles current helmets someday?
The latter. And they already have a helmet that out right now that you don't even have to wear a Guardian cap in practice if you wear that particular helmet, because it is on par with that. So, yes, I think that I don't think we'll ever get into a situation where you need to have the Guardian caps on. I think that the helmet technology will outpace that, and you will have a wide range and selection of helmets that match that standard.
All right. Nathan Zagura joining us here on the show. Too high safety. Is this an epidemic that is plaguing the NFL right now?
That was one of the most insane things. Mel Kiper saying they need to ban the too high safeties. It's been around for forever. Teams have played Tampa 2. That goes back to Dungy with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, how long ago was that? A long time ago. People have been playing too high safeties forever. There are ways to attack every single coverage. I think that what I really think the change is, number one, teams are moving the ball similarly to how they have in years past. Teams have been worse on third down this year than ever before. Think about this. The Browns last year were number one in third down defense at, 29%? And that was the best it had been since, the 2000s. The Browns this year are 30% on third down, so basically exactly what they were last year. And through 2 weeks, that's 10th best in the NFL. Red zone offense has been worse than it's ever been through the first 2 weeks of the season. Third down offense has been worse than it's ever been through the first 2 weeks of the season. That's not because of too high safeties. That's just because I think that everybody kind of takes the off season off. And I think that makes it very difficult to come out and be firing on all cylinders, and what you have to be so precise in NFL offense. And I'm not even saying that the preseason matters as much in terms of the carryover, but it seems that there's a little bit of a struggle there. And then the other thing is the NFL has evolved. Think about this. The Browns were playing against the Jags, single high safety, and we play more single high than anybody. You heard Jim Schwartz talk about how that can also be very effective. And you think of the Legion of Boom and that, Seattle cover three defense that they ran, and that was the best defense in the league for a long time. So you can be a great single high defense. You can be a great two high defense, but there are ways to beat all the various coverage families. The linebackers for the Browns, and I'm going to call Grant Delpit a linebacker for this purpose, is because when we play single high, he's down there in the box, and our three across would be JOK, Jordan Hicks, and Grant Delpit. Jordan Hicks is the biggest of those guys. He's 6'1", 230. JOK, 6'2", 220. Delpit, 6'3", 208. Those are the linebackers now, and they are able to play the run effectively because they're able to shoot gaps and still tackle. Now, those guys, think about what they're able to do in coverage and the ground that they are able to cover in zone defenses. Part of the reason that the Tampa 2 was so effective was that Derek Brooks was transformative in his athletic ability and the ability to run with the seam routes up the middle and run with tight ends and receivers. Now all these guys can do it.
Yeah.
They can cover all that space, and so the windows are smaller, and when they play kind of some of those shell concepts, the two high safety concepts, really it's about they're telling you have to throw it underneath, and teams will do that, and then they are so fast to the ball so that, Yak is down, especially against zone coverage, across the board. And that makes it more difficult, I think, for offenses. The way I think you're going to have, and you're starting to see a little bit more, teams are going to have to try to run defenses out of some of these looks and some of these personnel groupings to create easier ways to throw. Or you try to use, for example, the Browns will use, the two, Zach Zinter and Nick Harris, to try to get bigger guys on the field and some of the smaller guys off, and then you take a shot down the field.
Yeah.
That's kind of where it's headed right now. It ebbs and flows, but I really think the fact that you have 220-pound linebackers who can run with receivers has changed everything about defense in the intermediate game.
Nathan, we thank you very much for the time. We'll talk to you on Sunday. All the best, buddy.
And Lima, always a pleasure. Let me just say this. Guys, everybody, get into your guys, gals, everyone, get in your seats a little bit early. We have the Browns Legends induction, and Phil Dawson and Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, being honored and inducted before the game. And I think it's going to be a very special, very emotional ceremony. And it's a great honor for both Phil and for Jim. And I couldn't be happier for those two.
Absolutely. Great advice. Nathan, we'll talk to you on Sunday, buddy. All the best.
All right. Thanks.
Tone Guardians in the postseason. How far can they go?
World Series, baby. Let's go. Let's go.
All right. We'll find out. Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We welcome in one of the greatest to ever do it. From SiriusXM's Mad Dog Radio, they have a channel named after the man, for crying out loud. Channel 82. He's also High Heat, the host of High Heat on MLB Network, and First Take on ESPN. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Mad Dog Russo joins us on the show this morning. Chris, thanks for joining us.
How's the dynamic duo today? Things good?
They're as good as they can possibly be. The Guardians are in the postseason. The Browns won last week. We'll see what they do on Sunday. And hopefully the Cavs do okay. But first, Mad Dog, how far are the Guardians going to go in the postseason?
Well, listen, they're going to be they're not going to have the top record, so they're going to be the 2 seed, which probably means they'll be in that matchup with Houston. Although, you know, the Tigers got a lot of juice right now, and they could get that spot. But let's say they play Houston, be a rugged series, and then, of course, down the road, the Yankees. The Yankees are the big favorite in the American League. You know, in the NL, there's more balance. You know, San Diego could do it. The Phillies could do it. The Dodgers could do it. Even the Diamondbacks are the defending champ. Even the Mets are dangerous. And don't forget about Milwaukee, better than we think. The American League, I think it's the Yankees are better than everybody else. And the one thing about the Guardians, and they did a great job. Don't get me wrong. Great job. The one thing that worried me about the Guardians, the more relievers you use, and they're a team that's based on their bullpen, the more relievers you use in postseason, two things. The opponent gets used to you. So, you know, as you go along and you use these guys a couple different times, the offense or the other team gets a better feel of what you're trying to do to them to get them out. Mm. And number two, the more guys you use, the more moves you make, the better the chance you find the guy, if you're the manager, who doesn't have it. So and when you're using 5 guys to get 12 outs instead of 1 guy to get 12 outs, to me it makes it a lot harder. So because of that, I would think the Indians probably are going to lose somewhere along the line. Could they win a series against the Astros and get to the ALCS? Absolutely. I would be very surprised if they won 2 to get to a World Series. I think everybody would.
Mad Dog, Chris Russo, join us right now on the hotline. So we are sitting here. The one thing, the case that I've been trying to make all year is that I feel the American League is up for grabs. It's been wide open. If you look at the last 2 months, 3 months, and look at the records in the American League, it seems like all these teams have been kind of hovering around the same place. The Guardians, too, they built that 20-game lead to start out, or 20 games above 500, and they've kind of maintained since then. With that said, you really think the Yankees are that much better than everybody else?
Well, the Yankees can out-talent everybody. I mean, based on talent, there's no comparison. Who's got Judge and Soto in the middle of the lineup outside of the Dodgers? Even the Phillies don't have that. I mean, Soto's the best hitter in baseball, and Judge is, you know, after Ohtani or right with him, the MVP. And the Yankees have been hitting. Now, the Yankees are vulnerable. They don't play the small game properly, but they have Hall of Fame players on their team. Cole's a Hall of Fame pitcher, or thereabouts. Judge is a Hall of Fame performer, and Soto's a Hall of Fame performer. Plus, they got Stanton sitting there hitting fifth or fourth. So because of that, I would make the Yankees. To me, and I don't like the Yankees, this is not a Yankee homer. I hate the Yankees. But I would make the Yankees the big favorite in the American League. They're not going to have to play in a wild card round, and they're going to get the Orioles most likely in the opening round, and the Orioles have been a mess for 2 months. No bullpen, not a great depth starting pitching, and now they can't hit. So you don't have to play Houston. Houston's the wild card because of their pedigree, 7 straight ALCSs. The Astros scare me, but as far as the Yankees are concerned, I don't know how anybody could think the Yankees aren't the team to beat. Rizzo gives you a professional at bat. Stanton can hit, you know, he can blow up a game. Judge is the best player in the American League, and Soto's won a World Series, and he's been great. Plus, you throw in the idea you got Cole pitching a couple games. So the Yankees are the best team. Now, a short series, Boone's not the best manager. He's very spotty, but in a short series, I think you got to like the Yankees out of the American League. Doesn't mean they can't lose. Baseball is very unpredictable. That's why it's great in postseason. I mean, you know the better team wins in the NBA, not in baseball. That's why, and home field in football, that's why baseball's postseason is the best because it's so up and down and so crazy. Look at Arizona, Texas last year. But I think if you're looking at this properly and you're just trying to analyze the teams in the American League, the Yankees are the best team.
So we love the fact that we feel like we've got no pressure. This team, rookie manager, they've got a bunch of young guys. It feels like they've had a bunch of young guys throughout the year platooning all over the place that maybe just don't know any better. The Yankees, on the other hand, obviously last year missed the playoffs, the year before they get swept by the Astros, the year before they lose in a wild card to the Red Sox. Do you think pressure, that's something that gets talked about a lot in New York, especially with the Yankees. Is there a chance that gets to them, that they could have the most talent, but the pressure gets to them?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. If the Yankees don't go to the World Series this year, it is a big-time disappointment. That Soto is not guaranteed after this year, although I think he will sign. He's not guaranteed after this year. Yankees haven't been to a World Series since 2009, and they got the biggest payroll in the sport. So, and, you know, they spend twice, three times what the Guardians spent. So the pressure on the Yankees, 100%, that is something that you could deal with if you're a Guardian or if you're, you know, the Astros have no pressure. They've won two championships, and, you know, they've been the seven state ALCSs. They get a free year, the Astros. The Orioles are a young team. Nobody expects much out of Kansas City or Minnesota if they make it, or the Tigers. All the pressure's on the Yankees, and I definitely think that could work against them. And again, Boone is not Miller Huggins, okay? He has never managed a Game 7 of an ALCS. He's been there since 18. He never beats Houston. He's lost the Red Sox twice. So a lot of pressure on Boone, too. So you're 100% right. If you can put the Yankees in a spot where they get a little nervous, you could beat them. Now, the Guardians 2 years ago had them 2-1 up in Game 4 in Cleveland and couldn't beat them. Yankees won in the fifth game. So let's not forget that either. 2 years ago, Cole won Game 4 in Cleveland, and they beat Adam Savali in Game 5, and somehow, some way, Terry didn't pitch his best pitcher, you know, in that on short rest in Game 5, which I thought he should have done. But the bottom line is the Yankees have the most pressure, but they are the best team, and we shall see. Guardians have had a great year, playing with house money, great bullpen, Classe, I get all that. But I do feel that the Guardians are a little bit more of a regular season team than they are a postseason team, because I don't know if they have anybody that can dominate a short series. Soto can dominate a short series. Stanton can dominate a short series. Judge can dominate a short series. And Cole pitching twice can dominate a short series. That's four guys. I don't think the Guardians, you know, Classe is only pitching one inning. I don't know if the Guardians can do that from that standpoint. That's why I make the Yankees the favorite.
Chris Mad Dog Russo joining us on the show. MLB Network, ESPN's First Take, also SiriusXM Mad Dog Radio. So, hold on, I'm a little bit confused. Do you agree, Lyman, did you say there's no pressure on the Guardians?
Yeah, I kind of felt like
this team,
I mean, we were 79 wins was the total before the year started, Mad Dog.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think there's a ton of, I mean, I know 1948, we understand that, but the Guardians going in there with house money, they got $100 million payroll. Again, they've had a wonderful year in probably a spotty division. It's not a great division. White Sox 13 times, the worst team in maybe the history of the sport that they get a chance to beat. Yeah, I don't think the Guardians have a ton of, what, they're going to lose to Houston in a five-game series? You're going to go crazy? I can't. The Guardians scenario is to get into the postseason and then take a shot. The Yankees scenario is you better make the postseason and you better this year win the American League pennant. That's a much different quotient. The NL will be wide open, because I could see any of those teams, maybe not Milwaukee, but I could see any of those teams winning the pennant. I really am having, outside of Houston and the Yankees, yeah, you're going to have a tough time convincing a big baseball fan that the Kansas City Royals are winning the American League pennant, or that the Tigers are winning the American League pennant, or Seattle's winning the American League pennant, even Cleveland. So that's why I think, and the Astros could win the pennant, because Valdez is a good pitcher, Hunter Brown's a good pitcher, they got a pretty good bullpen, and with Altuve, Bregman, Alvarez, Tucker, they got four excellent, excellent players. So and they got a history of, you know, seven straight ALCSs with two titles. So I wouldn't be, but they're having a bad year, and then they're having a great year. If you tell me that Houston could get to the World Series, I could buy it, and the Yankees. I can't buy any of the other four teams. That's me.
But the reason I said, like, I think in a lot of ways you make a lot of sense. Like, with the team, they're relatively young. It makes a lot of sense. But my question about it is so much more big picture. And you know this. The haves and the have-nots. And I'm just trying to avoid the same old conversation. If they were to lose to Houston, if they were to lose to the Yankees, especially the Yankees, where their payroll is so much bigger than ours, and where it's always, well, our owner's cheap. Our owner won't do what's necessary to do it. That's why we won't go to baseball games. I'm trying to avoid that entire conversation because it's been 76 years since they won it. Obviously, it doesn't fall off of trees, but I think anytime they go into the postseason, there's got to be some pressure from the big point of view of just what city, what market they play in.
I understand your point. And, you know, the owner doesn't spend any money. I mean, they get by piecemeal. The front office is sort of the MVP of the team, which is, like Tampa, which is dangerous. You don't want your front office to be the MVP. You want the players to be the MVPs because they're the ones who are affecting the game. But Antonotti and Chernoff are the MVPs. So, I mean, that makes it, because they figure out a way to be competitive every year. Give them credit for that with what? Like about $100 million payroll? And I understand the Guardian fan. You know, Cleveland's, they've been around for 150 years. They were great in the 90s, and they should have won a championship in that period there. They didn't. And they had a good chance to beat the Cubs in 16. So they're sick of it, and they're probably going to lose to the Yankees again. Let's face it. If the Guardians play the Yankees in a seven-game series, the Yankees are going to be a huge favorite. I mean, go look at Vegas. I mean, Yankees are going to be minus 220. I mean, they're going to be a huge favorite, and you have to make them the favorite. And again, this does bother you. When you go out there and use relievers game after game after game, sooner or later, one of them is not going to have it. I mean, they're going to, for seven games, they're going to try to win games with their bullpen, getting 12 outs a night. Well, sooner or later in that situation, when Soto, Judge, and Stanton see the same guys, they're going to hit them. Plus, the Yankees were 5-2 against Cleveland in the regular season. Plus, they beat them 2 years ago, and that's going to be frustrating for the Guardian fan. Very frustrating. Losing the hated Yankees again with $100 million payroll. But that's the nature of this. That's the nature of the beast. It's New York and Cleveland. The owner should spend more money. You should have a better payroll than you do. It's a great ballpark. It's a great sports town. I love Cleveland. What are you going to do? This is not the NFL where everybody spends the same amount of money. This is baseball. The system is not fair to the lower market teams. I'm not sure. The Guardians scenario is, make the playoffs, they've had a good year. It's not win a championship, it's make the playoffs. Very rarely do you say that in the other sports, and that's frustrating if you're a Guardian fan.
Mad Dog, could you stomach voting for a closer like Emmanuel Clase A as a Cy Young Award winner?
No, I can live with it. It's happened before. Fingers won the Cy Young, Mike Marshall won the Cy Young, Eckersley won the Cy Young, MVP. Or Cy Young, either one of those awards, I can live with it. If they want to give it to Class A in the American League, Grubel's going to get it. I mean, he's won 17-4, strikeouts, ERA, and the Tigers are in a pennant race. And he pitched well in a couple games here when they needed to have him pitch well. So Grubel's going to win it because it's not like the Tigers have won 50 games. I mean, they're 80-73, and he's won 17 of them. So he is going to win the award. But if you tell me that Class A or a reliever in certain scenarios did have an opportunity to win it, I would have no problem with that. The problem is the reliever only can win the award when there's no dominating starting pitcher. Grubel's dominating. He's had a hell of a year. So that's why he's not going to win this year.
Chris Mad Dog Russo joining us on the show. Okay, so you say Aaron Judge is the best of the American League. It's hard to fight it. Where does Jose Ramirez stack up?
He's a great player. Give him all sorts of credit for staying in Cleveland. He's unbelievably underrated. He's not playing in a big market. He doesn't have a lot of big guys hitting around him. You love him. He's switch hitting. You know, all those things. But there's probably three or four players in the American League who might be a little better. I mean, Soto and Judge are better. I'd have to think here, top of my head, who I think is better than Bobby Witt's better, probably. There's probably about four guys, three guys. Seager is better when he's healthy, down in Texas. I think Alvarez is more dominant. So he's a great player, and I give him credit. He signed a lesser contract to stay there, to be the focal point of his team, He doesn't, you know, look for getting a lot of publicity. You love him. I mean, and it's great for the city, and he's an all-time Guardian. He's probably on his way to the Hall of Fame. So you love him. But, you know, he's probably top five in the league as far as being the best player. I think Witt will be better. I think Seager is better. I think Judge is better. I think Soto is better. You know, Rafael Devers, you know, I mean, Guerrero. I mean, he's in the conversation with those guys. You know, Seattle, Angels, Trout, no. Julio Rodriguez, no. Nobody on Oakland. So he's right there in the top four or five players in the league. I mean, that's pretty damn good. Is he as good as Judge? No. Is he as good as Soto? No. Yeah, I'd take Bobby Witt over him. I would take Seager over him. That's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Seager's going to the Hall of Fame. Witt's great. Judge is going to the Hall of Fame. Stays healthy. Same with Soto. I don't, you know, he's top five. That's pretty good.
All right, Shohei last night, amazing. He was 6-for-6, 10 RBI. He had the 3 home runs. He's now over 50 stolen bases, 50 home runs. We know the guy pitches when he's healthy. Where do you put him all time, and how does he compare batting-wise to Barry Bonds?
Well, Bonds is tricky because Bonds did steroids. So I look at Bonds a little differently than most people because, you know, I look at Bonds from 2000. I look at those last 70 years as a little bit of an aberration. He was an immortal, and he was only an immortal because he did the juice. You know, in the 90s, he was great. He was a Hall of Famer, but he wasn't an immortal. He became an immortal, 73 homers, the on-base records and all that, because of the steroids, for whatever the reason. You know, Ohtani, you know, he's probably going to the Hall. He's maybe not quite yet. No, he probably is. He's probably a Hall of Famer. He's not Ruth. He's not Ruth. Nobody's Ruth. And, you know, the ninth inning homer yesterday does bother me a little bit against the relievers, 17-3. Why is he in the game? I mean, I don't quite understand.
We love the numbers.
That.
We want the numbers, Mad Dog.
Freeman wasn't in the game. Betts wasn't in the game. I mean, to me, you're cheaping it. You think Mantle and Mays would be in the game at 17-3 in the last week of the season when they're going to the playoffs? Against a guy throwing, a position player, you think Willie would be in the ballgame? You think maybe they take him out? Willie,
did
you know
they,
what?
But did they need it though? Did they need it?
Off.
Did they need it though? Like it's like when you see 10 RBIs, like that sticks out to everybody. Like no, oh my God, 50-50, and he had 10 RBIs last night.
I don't know what did his interpreter have at the sports book.
Okay.
Maybe he needed to be
All
out
right.
there.
Jesus.
Well, I mean, the last 3 RBIs to me, and I don't have to make a big deal about it. I don't look at the last 3 RBIs as that big a deal myself because of the fact of the score of the game and where it was in the game and the fact it was a kid throwing 30 miles an hour. So to me, that's home run derby stuff. So I don't pay too much attention to it. I'm more and the stolen bases, I don't get as wrapped up in. I think Willie would have done 50 steals. As Mickey Mantle used to say, geez, if I'm making that big a deal about the stolen bases, I would have stolen 50. But again, that's a different era. Everybody was all wrapped up in it, and I'm not taking away from his greatness. 50 homers is 50 homers. He plays every day. I don't care about him being a DH. He'd do the same thing if he was in right field. He's a tremendous, tremendous hitter, and he's also going to go into the postseason. I don't think he's going to have a lot of pressure on him. I mean, what are you going to do? Kenneth's his first ever postseason. He has a couple of bad games. You're going to go crazy? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give the Dodgers and him a little bit of a break. He's an all-timer. He's the MVP, not Lindor. It's him. I don't go as crazy individually on the game last night because I take away the ninth inning. That's me. That doesn't mean 5-for-5, 7 RBIs, 3 homers is not a great game. But, you know, 6-for-6, 3 homers, 10 RBIs, well, it would have been 2 homers. 5-for-5, 2 homers, 7 RBIs. I don't go as wrapped up in that, but I understand how great he is. If you're asking me, is it an incredible achievement? It is. It's an incredible achievement. So give him credit. Give him credit.
Mad Dog, thank you very much for the time. We know you got 3 shows that you have to do basically every day. So we do appreciate the time. Andy Roth appreciates it, and we thank you again, and hopefully you'll join us again in the future.
You guys did a great job. Anytime. Love you.
Thank you very much. Chris Mad Dog Russo on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.